What do you see there?
A cigarette end and a match.
And what does that tell you?
It tells me nothing.
Obviously, you haven't made a study of these things.
Oh.
It is no ordinary match. It comes from South America. Luckily, it was unlit. Otherwise, I might not have recognized it. Evidently, one of the assassins threw away his cigarette and lit another, spilling one match out of the box as he did so.
And the other match?
Which match?
The one he did light his cigarette with? You have found that also?
It is of no importance. The cigarette end is enough. It is a South American cigarette with licorice pectoral paper.
But it is only 4 years since Monsieur Renault returned from South America. Might not the cigarette and match have belonged to him?
No. I have already searched among the effects of Monsieur Renault. His cigarettes were quite different.
Tell me, Monsieur Giraud, does nothing strike you as familiar about this case? Is there nothing it reminds you of?
I can't say offhand. I don't think so.
Nevertheless, a crime almost precisely similar has been committed before.
When and where?
Ah, that unfortunately I can't for the moment remember, but I shall do so. I hoped you might be able to assist me.
There have been many affairs of masked men.
Ah, man is an unoriginal animal. If he commits a crime, any other crime he commits will resemble it closely. The English murderer who disposed of his wives by drowning them in their baths is a case in point.
Where is all this getting us?
When you have two crimes, precisely similar in design and execution, you find the same brain behind them both. I am looking for that brain, Monsieur Giraud. And I shall find it.
I'm sorry, Monsieur, but he insisted...
Forgive me for disturbing you.
Who the devil are you? What do you mean by bursting into the room?
I suspect he has every right to do so. You are Jacques Renault, isn't that so?
That is correct.
So you did not sail on the Anzora?
The ship was delayed for 24 hours by engine trouble. I happened to buy an evening paper and saw the report of my father's death.
Sit down, Monsieur Renault. It must have been a terrible shock for you to learn the news as you did. I hope you will not feel that we are too insensitive if we
I'm at your disposal. Ask me any questions you please.
I understand that the journey was undertaken at your father's request.
That is so. Here's the telegram he sent.
Proceed immediately, Cherbourg, Anzora, sailing tonight, Buenos Aires. Ultimate destination, Santiago. Further instructions await you at Buenos Aires. You have been a good deal in South America, I think.
I was there as a child, but I was educated in England, and when the war came, I served in the Royal Flying Corps.
If you will permit, I would like to put a question to Monsieur Renault.
By all means, if you wish.
Were you on good terms with your father?
Certainly I was.
So there is no truth in the assertion that you had a violent quarrel with him on the eve of your departure for Paris?
We did have an argument.
And did you say something like, when you are dead, I can do as I please? I must request an answer.
I dare say I said that. I was very angry.
And what was the subject of your quarrel?
I decline to answer that.
Monsieur Renault, it is not permitted to trifle with the law.
I will inform you if you like, monsieur.
You know Poirot?
Certainly I do. The subject of the quarrel was Mademoiselle Marthe d'Aubray.
How the devil do you know that?
Is that so, monsieur?
Yes, it is. I love Mademoiselle d'Aubray, and I wish to marry her. When I informed my father of the fact, he flew at once into a violent rage. Well, naturally, I couldn't stand having the girl I love insulted, and I, too, lost my temper and said what I said.
You were aware, then, of the terms of your father's will?
I knew he'd left half his fortune to me, and the other half to my mother, to come to me after her death.
Do you recall an unusual present you gave to your mother? A paper knife?
The one I made from aeroplane wire.
It was the weapon which killed your father.
May I see it?
Your mother has already identified it, but of course you shall see it. If I might trouble you, Monsieur Beck.
Certainly. I will fetch it immediately.
In the meantime, let me put another question to you. Are you acquainted with the name of Duveen?
Duveen?
Bella Duveen.
It means nothing to me.
Perhaps you would care to read this letter. We found it in your father's overcoat. Can you give us any clue as to the identity of the writer?
I've no idea whatsoever. Does my mother?
As yet, no.
Monsieur le Juge.
Yes, what is it?
The dagger has gone.
What do you mean?
But I saw it this morning.
You saw it, Captain Hastings?
There was nothing for it but to make a clean breast of it. Under the circumstances, they were quite remarkably forbearing. Giraud even congratulated me on providing him with a vital clue. But it was Poirot's opinion that I dreaded. He seemed remarkably unconcerned and was more interested in measuring the length of Jack Renault's overcoat.
Most satisfying.
What were you hoping to learn by measuring it?
To see how long it was. Now, tell me, my friend, what are your thoughts about the case?
To tell you the truth, I'm very worried about Madame Renault. There's something about her that doesn't quite ring true.
You are right. From the beginning, I have been sure that she was keeping something back. At first, I suspected her, if not of inspiring, at least of conniving at the crime.
Why?
By the new will, she is the only person to benefit from her husband's death. You may have noticed that I took an early opportunity of examining her wrists. Mm-hmm. I wished to see whether there was any possibility she had bound herself.
And had she?
The cords had been drawn so tight as to cut into the flesh. There was no possibility she could have done it. But still there was something familiar about the story of the masked men and the secret. And there was the little matter of the wristwatch.
What about it?
Now, it is time to employ the little grey cells, my friend. When did the crime take place?
Well, Madame Renault said she heard the clock strike two while the men were in the room.
And she was lying. The crime took place at least 2 hours earlier. For some reason, it was imperative that it should appear to have taken place later than it actually did. You have heard of a smashed watch recording the exact hour of the crime?
Yes, but the watch...
The glass was broken, but the mechanism of the watch kept going, which drew my attention to two important points. First, that Madame Renault was lying. Second, that there must be some vital reason for the postponement of the crime. And that reason may have been that the last train left Merlinville at 17 minutes past 12.
So that if the crime appeared to have taken place 2 hours later, anyone leaving by that train would have an unimpeachable alibi.
Exactly.
Well, so we must inquire at the station. They can't have failed to notice two foreigners who left by that train.
Oh, my friend. Surely you do not believe all that rigmarole about the masked men?
But Renault's letter, the secret, and Santiago...
I'll take my word for it. Santiago is a red herring. The danger that threatened him was near at hand in France.
Well, then, what really happened?
Only one person could tell us that. Madame Renault. As I said, I suspected her at first, but...
What made you change your mind?
Her spontaneous grief at the sight of her husband's body. I could swear that was genuine.
And she actually fainted.
Oh, it was no fake. Tell me, Hastings, what is the explanation of the open door?
I suppose it was simply an oversight.
There is something about it which for the moment I cannot fathom. But one thing I am fairly certain of. They left by the window.
But there were no footprints in the flower bed underneath.
No, and there ought to have been. In the other bed, there were plentiful impressions of the gardener's big hobnailed boots. In the other, none. Someone had smoothed over the surface with a rake. But I must be going. The train to Paris leaves at 2:25.
Why are you going to Paris?
To look for the murderer of Monsieur Renault. I shan't be away long. Stay here and cultivate the society of Jacques Renault.
Which reminds me, how did you know about him and Marthe Debreuil?
Oh, my friend, I know human nature. Throw together a boy like young Renault and a beautiful girl like Mademoiselle Marthe, and the result is almost inevitable. And remember, she has anxious eyes.
What do you mean by that?
I fancy, my friend, that we shall see before long. But I must be on my way.
I'll come and see you all.
You'll do nothing of the sort. I forbid it.
There was nothing I could say to that, so I let him go. I strolled down to the beach in the hope that Cinderella might be disporting herself in some wonderful costume. But there was no sign of her. So I decided to try the Hotel du Phare.
I'm sorry, but there's no such lady staying here.
But the lady told me herself.
She must have made a mistake. There's been another gentleman here inquiring for her. He described her in just the same way.
What was he like?
He was a small, plump gentleman, very neat, with a stiff moustache.
So that was why he refused to let me accompany him to the station. I felt angry and betrayed. Why did he have to meddle in everything? I went to bed that night in a distinctly bad humour. The following morning was heavy and overcast, and an unwelcome surprise awaited me at the Villa Genevieve.
It is terrible. There is a curse upon the house. They should send for Monsieur le Curé to bring some holy water. Never will I sleep another night under this roof.
But what has happened?
Have you not heard? There's been another murder.
Who has been killed?
How should I know? He is a stranger. They found him up there in the shed, not 100 yards from where they found poor Monsieur Renault. And that is not all. He was stabbed with the same dagger.
I am expecting the doctor at any moment, although we hardly need him.
When was it done? Last night?
I don't lay down the law on medical evidence, but the man's been dead well over 12 hours. When did you say you last saw that dagger?
About 10 o'clock yesterday morning.
Then it was probably not long after that. The body was dragged in here after the killing by 2 people. They've been careful to obliterate their tracks, but I can see well enough the unmistakable prints of a woman's shoe.
She is here, monsieur.
Show her in. Madame Renault, this is the man. Do you know him?
No. I have never seen him in my life.
You do not recognize him as one of your assailants?
No. I do not think so.
Thank you, madame. That is all.
The doctor is here.
Good morning, Monsieur Giraud.
At last. We will leave you to get on with your work. Come, Mr. Hastings. There's something I want to show you. Just take a look at this.
A woman's hair.
It was wrapped round the handle of the dagger. A long black hair. Does it suggest anything to you?
Well, I scarcely...
It suggests to me Madame de Breuil. But there will be time enough to go into that. I shall confront her and her daughter with the body. But there is something else. Did you look at the victim's hands?
No, I can't say that I did.
The nails were broken and dirty, and the skin was hard. They were not the hands of a gentleman, but he was dressed as one, and none of his clothing is marked.
Monsieur Giraud.
Well, Doctor, was I right? The man was killed shortly after 10 yesterday.
Monsieur Giraud, that man has been dead for at least 48 hours, and probably longer.
The whole thing was utterly fantastic. And then a telegram arrived from Poirot. His train would arrive at Merlinville at 12:28. And needless to say, it was late. It occurred to me that I might pass the time by asking a few questions as to who had left by train on the night of the murder.
No, monsieur, there were no foreigners. Very few people took the train. I would certainly have noticed.
Did young Monsieur Renault leave by that train?
Oh, no, monsieur. What possible reason could he have for arriving and departing within half an hour?
You mean that he arrived at Merlinville that evening?
By the last train, 11:40.
Ah, mon cher ami, how good of you to come and meet me.
Oh, I thought that was what you expected.
Now, I have succeeded beyond all expectations.
Congratulations. Have you heard the latest here?
No, how could I possibly hear anything?
We must go up to the villa at once. Hmm? There has been another murder.
Another murder? Ah, then all my ideas are wrong. I have failed. It demolishes my theory. It ruins everything. Ah, no, it is impossible. I cannot be wrong. Unless...
Unless what?
Unless the victim is a man of middle age, his body was found in the locked shed near the scene of the crime and had been dead at least 48 hours.
Why, you're pulling my leg. You've heard all about it already.
Would I do such a thing? No, I assure you that I have heard nothing whatsoever.
Well, then how on earth can you know that?
I was right then. Ha-ha. The little grey cells, they told me. Come, let us cut across the golf links. I want to take a look at the body.
Why are you so interested in a bundle of rags?
What do you make of them?
Old clothes of the gardener's.
If you say so. Dr. Durand.
What is it?
There is foam on the lips. You observed it?
I didn't notice it, I must admit.
But you observe it now?
Oh, certainly.
It is a very strange wound. It has not bled. Now, what do you think, Doctor? And the dagger is
slightly discoloured, that is all.
I agree, it is most abnormal.
It is not abnormal at all. It is perfectly simple. The man was stabbed after he was dead. You noticed, of course, Monsieur Giraud.
Certainly, I noticed.
But how was he killed, Poirot?
He was not killed. He died. He died, if I am not much mistaken, of an epileptic fit.
Poirot was the hero of the hour, but he was terribly concerned that his moustaches had grown limp in the heat of the railway journey, and we returned to the hotel.
Ah, and just look at my tie. It is a disgrace. Could you pass me the pomade?
Here you are. Why did you go to Paris?
To find this newspaper cutting. You recognize the photograph?
Madame Dobray.
No, no. Not quite correct, my friend. She did not call herself by that name in those days. That is the notorious Madame Beroldi.
Madame Beroldi?
You remember the name?
Wasn't she the one who was accused of murdering her husband?
Just so.
She was found in her bedroom, bound hand and foot, with her husband dead beside her. And there was some story about masked Russians, but... Yes, that's just like...
No. Do not agitate me. The moustaches are at a critical point.
And there were two other men in the case. A lawyer called George Conno, who was supposed to have been her lover, and a rich American called...
Hiram P. Trapp.
And she was supposed to have got Conno to murder her husband so that she would be free to marry the millionaire. And when Conno found that he had been used by her, he wrote to the prosecutor making a public confession. He was never found, and she, somehow or other, was acquitted.
She swore that she had nothing to do with the planning of the crime. That Conno had killed her husband out of love for her, and that the first she knew of it was when she saw Conno standing over her with the blood-stained knife in his hand.
But didn't they prove she could easily have got out of her bonds?
They did, but she was a very beautiful woman, and her address to the jury was a masterpiece. She had a small child, I remember. A little girl.
Whatever became of her?
She left to begin a new life in Paris. And nothing more was heard of her.
I see everything now.
What exactly do you see?
But that it was Madame de Broglie who murdered Renault.
Why?
What?
Why should she murder Renault?
Well, because...
You see, we can find no shadow of a motive. She does not benefit by his death. Considered as a mistress or as a blackmailer, she stands to lose. You can't have murder without a motive. And there is something that you are forgetting.
And what's that?
It was not Madame Dubray who told us this tale of being tied up by masked men. It was Madame Renault. And so, we draw nearer to the truth, which is, as always, very curious and interesting.
What else have you found out?
I have discovered what Monsieur Renault sent for me to discover.
And you know the murderer?
I know one murderer.
What do you mean?
That we have here not one crime, but two. The first I have solved. The second, I must confess I am not sure.
But I thought you said the man in the shed died a natural death.
Ta-ta-ta-ta. Still you do not understand. One may have a crime without a murderer, but for two crimes, it is essential to have two bodies. Enter. Monsieur Jacques, please come in. You got my little note?
Yes, I did.
I'm sorry to oblige you to come out here, but you will perhaps understand the atmosphere of the villa is not very congenial to me. Monsieur Giraud and I do not see eye to eye.
I can't bear the sight of him. He's an arrogant idiot.
Then may I ask a little favor of you?
Well, certainly.
Would you be so kind as to go to the railway station and take a train to the next station along the line, Abalac? Ask at the cloakroom where the two foreigners left a case there on the night of the murder. Will you do that?
Certainly, I will.
There is a train in a quarter of an hour, and I must ask you not to return to the villa, as I have no wish for Giraud to get an inkling of your errand.
I'll go straight to the station.
Just a moment. There is one other thing. Why did you not tell Monsieur Otey that you were in Merlinville on the night of the murder?
Because I was not in Merlinville. I was in Cherbourg.
But the staff at the railway station say you arrived by the 11:40 train.
Do they? Are you accusing me of murdering my father?
I should like an explanation.
I came to see my fiancée, Mademoiselle Debray. I was about to go away for a long time. I did not want the whole world to know about us.
And did you see her?
Yes.
And afterwards?
I found I'd missed the last train. I walked to Beauvais and got a car to take me to Cherbourg.
A long walk at that hour of night. Well, thank you, Monsieur Jacques. And now, if you would be so kind as to carry out my little errand.
Of course. Au revoir, Monsieur Poirot. Mm-hmm.
What was all that about? Why are you sending him off to Abelac?
Oh, come, Hastings. Surely it is obvious.
Oh, you want to get him out of the way?
Ah, your penetration is amazing. Now, let us go up to the Villa Genevieve.
But we did not go straight there. Instead, Poirot decided that we should hang about outside the Villa Marguerite, hoping that Mademoiselle Marthe might come into the garden. And, eventually, she appeared.
Mademoiselle, a little word with you.
What is it, Monsieur Poirot?
You remember asking me if anyone were suspected of the crime?
Yes, monsieur. You said they were looking for two Chileans.
If you were to ask me that question again now, I should give you a different answer.
Who then?
Jacques Renaud.
But that's impossible.
You know, of course, that he was here on the night of the murder.
Yes, he told me.
It was unwise of him to have tried to conceal the fact.
Yes, but we cannot waste our time on regrets. He is innocent, and we must save him.
Mademoiselle, is there something that you are keeping back that you could tell us?
Yes, there is something, but I hardly know whether you will believe it.
At any rate, tell us.
On the morning of the day Monsieur Renaud was killed, I was walking here in the garden when I heard a sound of men's voices quarreling in the garden of the Villa Genevieve. I pushed aside the bushes and looked through. One of the men was Monsieur Renaud, and the other man was a tramp, a dreadful creature in filthy rags. He was asking for money. At that moment, Maman called from the house, and I had to go. When the second corpse was found, Monsieur Giraud insisted I looked at it. I am almost sure that the tramp and that dead man are the same.
But why did you not say so at the time?
The body was dressed in gentleman's clothes. It was only afterwards
Marthe,
that I...
where are you?
Forgive me, I must go.
Let us go back to the Villa Hastings.
Is she just trying to divert suspicion from her lover?
It is a curious tale, but I believe it to be the truth. And she inadvertently gave us the truth on another point. She did not say that Jacques Renaud had been with her on the night of the crime. She simply said, he told me. If he did not see her, then who did he see?
The Villa Genevieve seemed deserted. Poirot led me swiftly to Jacques Renaud's room and very methodically started to search through the cupboards and the desk.
What is it? A car's just driven up. It's Giraud with Jacques Renaud and two gendarmes.
Oh, that stupid animal cannot wait. I shall not be able to replace the things in this drawer with the proper method, but I have found what I want. Come.
What is happening? Where are you taking my son?
He is under arrest for the murder of his father.
What? It's not true. It can't be true.
Before anyone could get to her, she fell heavily down the stairs. Poirot was instantly at her side.
She has cut her head badly, and I fancy there is slight concussion here.
But she must make a statement.
Then you will have to wait. She will probably be unconscious for at least a week.
A doctor was sent for, and we left Madame Renaud in the capable hands of Françoise. Giraud went off with his captive. Poirot decided he wanted sea air.
We will sit on this little mound and review the case.
Do you believe Jack is guilty?
There is just a chance of it. But Giraud, of course, has got it wrong. The gravest charge against Jacques Renaud is known only to me.
What is that?
Now, if you would use your little grey cells and see the whole case as clearly as I do, you too would perceive it. Think, my friend. Arrange your ideas. Be methodical.
There is one thing.
Well?
There's someone we've forgotten.
And who is that?
Georges Connor.
Excellent. Carry on.
Well, he disappeared 20 years ago, but we've no reason to suppose he's dead.
Proceed.
Therefore, we will assume that he is alive.
Perhaps.
Or that he was alive until recently.
Better.
Let us presume that he's fallen on evil times. He's become a tramp. And quite by chance, he comes to Merlinville. And there he finds the woman he never ceased to love.
Ah, always the romantic.
No. Let me go on. He finds that she has a new lover, Monsieur Renault. He lies in wait for him as he comes to meet his mistress and stabs him in the back. There's a terrible scene with Madame de Broglie, and he suddenly falls down in an epileptic fit. Jacques Renault suddenly appears...
No. This is a tale for the cinema. It bears no sort of resemblance to everyday life.
Well, I admit I haven't got into all the details,
The contrary, you have ignored every one of them. Now, let us start from the basic fact of Georges Renault. It is possible that he contrived Madame Beroli's story about being tied up by Russians all those years ago. Mm. It is equally possible that he contrived the tying up of Madame Renault. He is the most likely person to be behind the affair. Now, let us go through the case chronologically. You have a notebook and pencil?
Yeah.
Good. 23rd of May. Monsieur Renault quarrels with his son over the latter's wish to marry Martha d'Aubray. Son leaves for Paris. 24th of May. Monsieur Renault alters his will, leaving entire control of his fortune in his wife's hands. 7th of June. Quarrel with tramp in garden. Letter written to Hercule Poirot imploring assistance. Telegram sent to Jacques Renault telling him to proceed to Buenos Aires. Chauffeur sent on holiday. Visit of a lady that evening. But who was she?
The woman called Bella Duveen, his mistress.
And how do we know that?
By the letter found in his overcoat.
But what makes you think that letter was written to him?
Well, it was in the overcoat. Are you suggesting it was planted?
I am suggesting it was not his overcoat. You remember that on examining the dead man's overcoat, I suggested that it was overlong? I also measured the overcoat of Jacques Renault. It was short. So, when he flung out of the house for Paris after the row with his father, he took the wrong overcoat.
So, the letter was written to Jacques Renault.
Exactly. So, now we know why Bella Duveen came to the villa that night, though whether she hoped to see Jacques also, we do not know. She told Monsieur Renault she had a claim on Jacques and showed him letters Jacques had written to her. The older man tried to buy her off by writing a check, which she tore up. In the end, he got rid of her, and you remember the words overheard by the maid Leonie?
Yes, but for God's sake, go now.
He was desperately anxious to get her out of the way. Time was slipping by, and for some reason, time was precious.
Why should it be?
That is what we must ask ourselves. Time was important. Do not forget the incident of the wristwatch.
You always keep coming back to that. I don't see where all this is leading us. Why can't you simply tell me who killed Monsieur Renault?
That is just what I am not sure of.
That's typical. You ridicule all my ideas, but when it comes down...
Patience, my friend. Remember, it is two crimes we are investigating, for which, as I have pointed out, we have the necessary two bodies. Now, let me ask a question.